This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. Our guest this morning is David Corton, co-founder and board chair of the Positive Futures Network, which publishes Yes, a Journal of Positive Futures. David also is founder and president of the People Centered Development Forum and has authored or edited numerous books, including When Corporations Rule the World, The Post-Corporate World, and Globalizing Civil Society. David Corton is here today to tell us about his most recent book, The Great Turning, From Empire to Earth Community, published in 2006 by Cumerian Press and Barrett Kohler Publishers. Welcome, David.
Delighted to be on your show again, Diane.
It's great to have you here. What led you to write The Great Turning?
Oh, my. It of course, comes out of the totality of my life experience, having worked outside of the U.S. and Africa, Asia, and Latin America for 21 years, trying to find the key to ending global poverty. And then, of course, the path I took from there, dissecting the global economy and the role of global corporations and global financial markets and putting our species on a very self-destructive course. Now, this latest turn in my thinking, it's really a deepening of the framework, actually grew out of a discussion with Vandana Shiva, the activist, very well-known activist from India, when she was visiting here in 2002 after 9/11. And we began to talk about how after 9/11, the members of the Bush administration and the political pundits were talking explicitly about empire and making comparisons between the American Empire and the Roman Empire, speaking about a Pax Americana. And that issue is being debated. Now, in the conversation, it clicked that, you know, our analysis, our focus had been on the issue of economic globalization and the role of corporations, but specifically that corporate role is more like at most a kind of a 400-year history. But as soon as you put the frame of empire on it, it throws you into a much deeper perspective and recognizing that empires go back roughly 5,000 years. Now, in my thinking, that clicked into place conversations that I'd had over time with Rhianne Eisler and reading her book, The Chalice and the Blade, in which Rhianne notes that there are two basic models for organizing human relationships. One, a dominator model based on dominator hierarchy, and the other, a partnership model based more on equal power relationships and networking. She actually ties that in with the historical human experience of the shift that took place some 5,000 years ago from relatively more egalitarian and peaceful societies, by the best reading of the archaeological evidence. And that turning was, you know, the historians refer to it specifically in terms of the emergence of empire, which they also equate with the emergence of civilization and the beginning of history, which says something about how our language tends to legitimate the structures of empire. But what happened at that point was the beginning of a reframing of human relationships at all levels, from the relations among nations to the relations among family members, around dominator hierarchy, and most all the issues of gender discrimination, racism, war, inequality, all flow out of that shift, because what we ended up doing is creating societies that have a few people on the top and most people on the bottom. And once you begin to look at that dynamic, you begin to recognize the broader implications and the fact that our current difficulties with corporate globalization is simply a modern or contemporary manifestation of that much deeper pattern. Now then, you put that in the context of our current confrontation with the limits of the planet and the spreading breakdown of the social fabric, which is a result of reaching the limits of social tolerance of people for the extremes of inequality and the massive exclusion of a major portion of the human population from what we look to as the benefits of modernization. And you begin to realize that to get out of our current human crisis of social and economic and environmental breakdown, we have to get back onto the trajectory of partnership societies, move beyond empire, break out of that dynamic, and embrace the principles of Earth community as they've been laid out in the Earth Charter.
What are the dynamics or underlying forces that tend to keep empire or the dominator culture in place?
Yeah, that's a very good question, and it's very fundamental. Essentially, when you get societies divided between the rich and the poor, the privileged and the unprivileged, and you create a dynamic between nations or originally city-states, you create a compete or die, rule or be ruled dynamic, because you're either on the top or you're on the bottom. You're put in a position where it seems there's almost no alternative to playing the game. If you're going back in earlier history, if you're the king or the ruler of one city-state, you're looking over at your neighbor king with his city-state, and you're realizing, you know, if I don't conquer him, he's likely to come and conquer me. So I'm going to try to conquer him first. Now, part of this plays out of the dynamic that to maintain the system of domination, the rulers are also conscious they have to be continuously acquiring new resources, both to maintain the structures of domination, the military forces, the police forces, and so forth, that are required to enforce the system of domination. And that requires resources, as well as you've got to pamper your nobles and retainers and the people that you rely on to manage the system. So you're always looking for ways to reach out and get more resources away from your neighboring rivals. So all of this creates this inexorable competition. It's the same basic dynamic that we see playing out in the global economy, that with the opening of borders to the free flow of goods and the reach of global corporations beyond any kind of public accountability, the real effect of that is to pit every community and every worker in the world in competition with one another for the favor of global corporations in order to get the few jobs that are available. And so that same dynamic, of course, in our own time, creates the pressure for each community to give bigger tax breaks and subsidies to the big corporations they're trying to attract into their economy. So this is that's the large dynamic of empire. And once we recognize it, it becomes so clear that the only way to get out of our current human dilemma is to move beyond that and discover our human capacities to live and relate in a very different way, based on much more cooperative and egalitarian relationships, both among people and in our relationship to Earth.
Could you say now more about the alternative to the dominator culture, the Earth community, and what its priorities are as contrasted to the dominator culture?
Yeah, this again gets back to very basic connections. One of the most basic epiphanies is coming to realize that there is no way to end poverty without dealing with the issue of equality. We've been led to believe that we should not begrudge the rich their wealth and power. The idea is to simply bring everybody up at the bottom. But as long as you have this enforced system of inequality, particularly on a finite planet, it really is an issue of how the wealth of the planet is distributed. So we have got to deal with the issue of inequality. Now, the positive side of this is as people begin to wake up to the reality of the cost of empire and how it leads to our alienation from one another, it leads to conflict, it leads to the alienation from place, alienation from our neighbors, the destruction of community. As people begin to get into understanding the real implications of that, we come to see that there really is possibility for much fuller, happier, healthier lives if we turn away from that competition for ever more ridiculous material excess, get into patterns where we spend more and more of our lives commuting to work, to jobs that we may detest and that are destructive of our humanity, that if we concentrate instead on rebuilding community, building family, restoring our natural environment, and begin to focus on those things that really make life meaningful, enjoyable, and fulfilling, that it's really not about sacrifice, but it is about discovering the depths of the potentials of our humanity. Now, this plays into a very interesting set of psychological dynamics, that basically the institutions of empire depend on limiting the development, our psychological development, to the higher levels of consciousness and awareness. It basically depends on keeping us into a kind of an infantile state where we're only able to comprehend our kind of immediate advantage and find it very difficult to recognize that others have their own needs and their own point of view, and that there are larger community interests. As we look at that, it becomes very evident that in our society, many of our leaders are actually the people in the positions of highest power are people who are actually locked into those lower levels of functioning of consciousness, and that the more mature consciousness, the consciousness of the mature adult, the elder, is one that takes a much larger perspective on society, is able to truly grasp the concept of global community, and to recognize through the deep of spiritual awareness the interconnectedness of life, of all being, of all people, and the potentials for creating societies that are not based on trying to destroy your neighbor to gain a temporary advantage, but rather are based on carrying forward the deeper work of creation, of exploring, discovering our higher possibilities to live in cooperative, creative community, and exploring the higher limits of human possibility.
I'm Diane Horn, and we are speaking with David Corton about his most recent book, The Great Turning, From Empire to Earth Community. What would a fully established Earth community look like? What would be the indicators of success?
Yeah, that's, again, a very interesting question. Well, the indicators question is very, very foundational, and of course we're conditioned to the idea that our progress and our well-being is measured by increases in economic output, our gross domestic product, by increases in the stock indices. Now, part of the awakening is to recognize that those indicators, what they actually measure, you know, it took me a long time to figure this out, but it's so clear once you see it and confirmed by my experience overseas, that those indicators really measure the rate at which the resources of the poor or people without power are being transferred to people who have power, to the wealthy. Essentially transfer from the poor to the rich, which is why we have the phenomenon of the poor getting poorer and the rich getting richer. And once they're transferred to the rich, what happens is they're very quickly converted into garbage. So it's about transferring resources from the poor to the rich to turn them into garbage. That's what we measure when we're celebrating increases in GDP and stock values. Now, if we're really serious about life values, about the quality of our lives, quality of our communities, we would measure our progress by indicators of the well-being of our children. Are they healthy? Are they experiencing stable families? Are they growing in their creative potential, their understanding of the world, and their ability to contribute not just as economic pawns in a dehumanizing system, but as creative, artistic, loving, caring individuals who are able to establish strong, vibrant families and communities, and to explore the boundaries of what it means to be human and what our possibilities are as a species. That in turn leads to global systems in which we're dealing much more with solving our own problems locally to the extent possible, but also doing it within a framework of cooperation, both with our local neighbors and our global neighbors, where we share information, we share learning freely, and we also share resources as necessary, but we don't build our economies and our societies based on the presumption that if we have enough military power, we can go out and gain control of the world's energy and mineral resources for our exclusive benefit. So the Earth community would, it involves a whole different kind of image of who we are as a species and of our sense of our relationship to creation and to Earth, and means involves functioning much more the way healthy ecosystems function, being strongly rooted in place and being deeply cooperative in the use and exchange and efficient utilization of resources.
What can be the strategy behind bringing an Earth community forward?
One of the themes in the book, and it's a theme that that I've become increasingly conscious of, is the focus on changing our stories. And it seems absurdly simple at the beginning, but as you dig into it more deeply, empire maintains its power in part by maintaining a cultural trance that denies us the capability to recognize any possibility beyond the way things are. To the extent that we come to recognize those stories and engage the work of changing them to replace the stories of empire, so to speak, in our culture with the stories of the possibilities of Earth community, that, I believe, is the key to change, and that's what we're about at Yes Magazine. Just as examples, one of our most basic stories is constantly repeated, that we humans are by nature a fallen species, that economists tell us that we are inherently selfish and competitive, and our best interests and the best interests of all are served by each of us pursuing our individual greed with unmitigated enthusiasm. That's one of the deeply false and flawed stories, because in fact, if you look at what we know about our human psychology, we are creatures of many possibilities, and yes, we have our potentials to express our darkest side. But we also have enormous potentials on the positive side for creativity, for compassion, for cooperation. And if you look at the deeper patterns, it's through the, one of the stories is that we advance through the destructive competition, that it's through the demand for increasing military capabilities and so forth that our technology increases and we improve our lives. Now, you actually look at the deep history and what you see is individual civilizations have made great accomplishments, and then somebody comes through and there's a war and that's destroyed and things kind of start over again. So we begin to get into these stories of redefining the whole idea that the history and civilization began with empire, and recognize that actually most of the accomplishments that make us distinctively human came before the onset of empire. And most of the technologies in which the advances that we take such pride in, including positive ones, have come since the beginning of the introduction of more democratic forms of organization and politics. So it's as we begin to open up the system to the expression of creativity of a larger percentage of the population that we've really begun to make those advances. And yet, again, another piece of the story is that needs to change is recognizing that the progress we have made toward democracy remains extremely partial, which suggests something of the enormous potentials for increasing creativity if we come to recognize that and carry forward the democratic experiment. Taking this back to the empire story, we're about our country. We all grew up being encouraged to believe that with the American Revolution, our founding fathers established liberty and justice for all people and embedded that in the Constitution, and that we have the most ideal democracy in the world that assures our rights and our freedoms. Go back and deconstruct that story, and the reality begins to come through that, well, the founding fathers were all white males, white male property owners. And if you actually look at the initial Constitution, it was really about enshrining, protecting the rights of white male property owners. Yes, we have the Bill of Rights. That came only later through strong popular opposition. The Constitution still enshrined slavery as a legal institution, embedded right in the Constitution. The land, of course, we live on was all acquired by deceit or force from American Indians, indigenous population. Women didn't get the vote till 1920. So you begin to look at those realities, and you see, well, there was an important step made with the revolution, and the founding fathers did do away with the institution of monarchy. That was an important step, and they also introduced the separation of church and state to bring an end to a formal end to theocracy, which is religious rule or rule by a particular religious faith. Now, these were enormous contributions to democracy, but we are still engaged in the democratic struggle, as our current administration makes so clear. And democracy remains an unfinished project. Our democratic institutions represent definite progress over the monarchy that they replaced, but there is still enormous room for advance in carrying forward the democratic project to its ultimate possibility. But it's only as we wake up and realize, oh, yeah, we were founded as a plutocracy, ruled by rich people. We're still a plutocracy. And to really actualize the ideals and the potentials of democracy, we still have a lot of work to do. So those are some examples of the stories.
What do you see as the signs that the Great Turning is actually taking place and that we are moving toward Earth Community?
Well, I think, at the large level, the whole emergence of global civil society, which found one of its initial strong public expressions in the Seattle protests against the World Trade Organization. That was a remarkable international event. Far more dramatic, building from that, were the global demonstrations on February 15, 2003, prior to the Iraq War, calling for a peaceful resolution of the issues and a prevention of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Now, that involved over 10 million people on the same day. Nothing like that had happened previously in the human experience, and it's a reflection of an awakening global consciousness, a recognition of deeply shared global values, and our human potential to organize through networking structures without central bureaucracies and coercion. But we're also seeing in value surveys and so forth a growing awareness of the need for a world based on justice for all, the new relationship with the environment. And I think in our own country, over the past year or so, we've seen an enormous awakening to the fact that we're confronting the realities of peak oil, climate change, and a wildly out of control U.S. economy that is based increasingly on importing the goods from abroad with no offsetting exports. So we're essentially our high consumption lifestyle now is being financed on international consumer credit, and that debt is growing at such a rate it cannot be sustained. Now, all three of these factors, peak oil, the end of cheap petroleum, climate change, and the breakdown, collapse of the U.S. dollar, are going to force dramatic changes in the way we live, and people are beginning to wake up to that. The fact that business as usual is over, the fact that the leadership for change is not going to come from our political system or from the global corporations as now constituted. It must come from communities. It must come from people who are in closer touch with reality and who are awakening to the possibilities to rebuild our communities on a very different set of relationships and values. So all of that is bursting forth. Now, the question is, will we be able to make the transition in time? That's a question that no one can answer. It depends on how quickly the awakening spreads and the depth of our understanding of the possibilities of the new stories. I think that's progressing very fast. Whether it's fast enough, I don't know. My own sense is that we have to believe that it is possible and try to create a self-fulfilling prophecy that we can and will do it, because the alternative is to create a self-fulfilling prophecy that we cannot make the change, which creates the self-fulfilling prophecy of our own self-destruction.
Who and or what groups are currently involved in helping to bring the Earth Community forward?
Oh, that's all sorts of groups. I mean, we're seeing, of course, my own connections with Yes Magazine. We are getting increasingly clear on our role in helping to change the stories, bring forward the stories of people that are doing that work. Of course, yesmagazine.org on the web is, I think, one of the best sources of information people have on who these groups are. Now, another group I'm very much involved in is the Business Alliance for Local Living Economies, which is developing chapters all around the United States and Canada. We have 34 chapters in place. It keeps growing so fast I can hardly keep track. Dozens of groups that are beginning to organize, and that's about rebuilding our local economies free from the control and power and disruption of the global corporations. But it involves rebuilding our local economies based on local independent enterprises that are owned by people who live in the communities, who work in the enterprises, and whose concern is to build the wealth and strength of the community rather than simply extract from it. Now, here on Bainbridge, we have the Bainbridge Graduate Institute, which is an innovative new MBA program that starts out from the premise that a primary purpose of business is to serve community and the planet, people. Beyond that, we're seeing community groups mobilizing all around the country to begin to rethink how can our communities become more energy independent and more food independent, which is a key. Both of these are key elements of rebuilding local economies. One of the things I find most hopeful is the awakening of the progressive faith community. And these forces are emerging in all the different denominations around the country, that people are beginning to wake up to the fact that there's a group of religious extremists that have taken over the definition of what it means to be a person of faith, in particular what it means to be a Christian, finding the faith in terms that are highly at odds with what Jesus taught, and these folks are coming forward to reclaim the faith and build on the realization that the foundational values of Christianity are about building community, about opposing empire, about creating opportunities for the most disadvantaged, the most excluded. This I find a very exciting development, and a lot of that is beginning to look into a deeper examination of the underlying creation stories that we live by. That, I think, is truly foundational in terms of the changing of the stories, beginning to bring together the recognition that there is a deeper intelligence involved, but that intelligence is intrinsic to the process of creation and to the existence of all being, and that creation itself is an ongoing process. It's not a destination, it's a journey, and that we're all part of that journey, and that our whole purpose of our being, of our existence as human beings, is to find our place of service to that unfolding creative process by which creation itself and the spiritual intelligence of creation comes to know itself through exploring the frontiers of its possibilities. So these are all indications of the changes that are taking place and creating a new sense of human possibility.
We're out of time, but what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, the message is that we have enormous unrealized potential, that we are in a period of testing, a period of deep crisis, but it also is a time of great opportunity to essentially rediscover what it is that makes us human, and to engage the great work of bringing that into reality.
Well, thanks so much for being here, David.
Thank you, Diane. It's always good to be on your show.
You have just been speaking with David Corton, author of The Great Turning, From Empire to Earth Community, co-published in 2006 by Cumerian Press and Barrett Kohler Publishers. For more information, check on the web at www.greatturning.org. That's www.greatturning.org. And you are invited to a presentation by David Corton this coming Thursday, September 7th at 7:30 p.m. at Seattle First Baptist Church, 1111 Harvard Avenue on First Hill in Seattle. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week.